Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Okay, welcome to today's special edition of the Sunday Roast. We have special guests today, Alexandria Binkowski. I hope I've pronounced that correctly, the CEO of Hydrogen Utopia International, and Howard White, who is the director of Hydrogen Utopia International, and also a special
advisor
to
strategic
advisor to Powerhouse Energy, and Powerhouse Energy's largest shareholder, and I think he's got a few quid in Hydrogen Utopia as well. So yes, he has a lot on the line. So welcome.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you very much.
Let's start. I mean, effectively, the company's moved forward quite a lot in the last 6-7 months. We listed in January, I think it was January the 7th this year. We've had a tumultuous period of time in the stock market. Yeah, we're sitting now where your share price is above where it started. So that in itself is probably a result, considering the what has happened in the stock market during that time.
Major.
And so, Alexandra, just tell us a little bit. I mean, from listing, we were talking very much about Conan, and then we've moved on to Ireland. But let's take it one step at a time. Let's talk about Conan first, and then we're going to talk about Ireland, and then the partnership now and the joint ventures with Powerhouse Energy. So I think that's the way to go. So give us your thoughts on what's happening there in Conan.
Of course. So as most of you know, I think most of the shareholders already are familiar with the biggest hurdle, which is the EIA, right? Environmental Impact Assessment. So we submitted our EIA for Konin on the 6th of December of last year, and we actually got very far with it. So I think a month ago, we got a list of questions, four pages of questions from the regulators, and there are many. There are water, Polish waters, protections for animals, birds, all sorts of different institutions asking us many questions. And Sweco, as you know, is our partner in Poland. They have responded exactly a week ago. I signed it off, and we should get their answers in a month. So the EIA process is actually moving along very, very quickly. Just to let you know, in Poland, the EIA process can take up to 1.5 years. So we are actually moving faster than we thought. As I said, we submitted in December. We are in August in discussions with them. So the way the EIA process works is that you will get it eventually. It's just like a dialogue with the regulators and the ones who are submitting the EIA, which is Sweco, on our behalf, and the questions they ask were actually pretty logical, I would say. I mean, it makes sense that nobody has ever done it before. This is a new technology, so they have their questions. They are a governmental body. They have to do their job. It pains me that it takes so long in general. During the last summit in Poznań, Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the EU, said that all the permitting should be cut significantly, 3 months, 4 months, all the permitting EIAs, because it takes way too long for new technologies like ours to progress. But it's not happening yet. We are where we are. All of EU, I think only America or maybe Africa, you can build this plant very quickly when it comes to the permitting. But the European Union is very, very strict about their environmental regulations. So we are progressing there, yes.
Yeah. With the issues over the Russian gas because of Ukraine, they're going to have to change their view. It's essential, otherwise they're going to be in serious trouble.
Look, I believe not only I absolutely agree. I think it's always that the governments are like these big corporations. Everything before from the moment somebody thinks something to the moment that somebody signs something off, it's just like years. Years.
Yeah,
but
years.
I truly hope that now, look what happened with Germany, and we all know what's happening with Germany. 40 years of their policy of kind of tidying themselves up with Russian gas made them like put them on their knees. It's very sad. It's the first time in history when they're importing electricity from Poland. So they're in serious trouble. And go on, Howard, because I could see you are.
I was just going to say that what's important to point out is that in most cases, people think of something like this as a spike. you know, there's a war in Ukraine, and when the war finishes, everyone will shake hands and, you know, kiss and make up. That I don't believe will happen, because what Putin has done is he has weaponized his energy. And the moment that he did that, it's an irreversible act. Essentially, if Putin dies, Navalny comes in, or Mother Teresa comes in. The fact is that the Russians show that they like strongmen, they like Stalin, they like Putin, they like people who absolutely control. And Putin has demonstrated that they will use their energy as a weapon. Therefore, going forward, even though there may be good relations between Europe and America and Russia, the fact is that they will not put themselves in the situation that they put themselves in now, where they are totally reliant upon Russia for its gas and oil. I think that it will never get to the point again where Germany is and other countries more than 50% reliant upon Russian energy. So that means that, unfortunately, energy, well, unfortunately for everyone, but energy prices will remain relatively high. So all these thoughts of hydrogen at €1 a kilo, I think are history. The reality is that most hydrogen is produced by steam methane reforming, and that's costing now €5 a kilo. And then by the time it gets out there, it's more like €15. And we're working our models on €8 and €9 a kilo. So we think we're going to be very, very competitive. And that really is.
Yeah. And I mean, regardless of what you say about the war, whether there's a good relationship with Russia afterwards, et cetera, we've just entered a period of time of, I hate the word that use the word of hyperinflation, but, you know, very large inflation increases. So everything that goes into that input channel is increasing in value. You know, you can argue your systems are going to cost more to build because of that inflation, where, you know, regardless of the number involved, it's going to cost more. It's going to cost more to produce oil. It's going to cost more to produce the gas. You know, all of these things are, you know, the input costs, if you like, to produce all of these energies. Now, the fundamental situation with Hydrogen Utopia and Powerhouse Energy is that we're saving the planet from its big plastic problem, as well as having a byproduct, if you like, of producing energy. I mean, without the ability to get rid of the plastic problem, why would you bother doing this? You wouldn't bother doing it. It's not worth it. Okay. Yeah. It is to, you know, the fundamental reason that Conan wants to do this is to rid itself of the huge amounts of plastic that it's going to have. Europe's been dumping its plastic all over the world to try and just get rid of it because it doesn't want to deal with the problem for decades. And now it can't do it anymore because it's illegal. So now they have to deal with the problem, face the problem. So, yeah, I mean, Conan's going to be a good example. I mean, from a timescale point of view, then, Alexandra, even though we don't like to put timescales on it, but the reality is this is where we're at.
Kevin, I'm sorry, if I may, I'll talk about the timescale in a moment, but I just want to say how big the plastic problem is, not just for Poles, and coin indeed is very, very important in all of that. But I read a couple of days ago, there was this pretty big scandal, probably, you know, it's not a UK scandal, so it's a continental scandal, when a huge Dutch company wouldn't know how to get rid of their tires, right? So they illegally transported their tires to Poland for illegal to put them on an illegal dump, you know, some landfill. And the driver, well, unfortunately to him, because he went to jail for like 48 hours for that, he was caught by the police. And the police said, you know, sir, what are you transporting? The guy says, well, you know, tires. And he didn't have appropriate documents. And it ended up, you know, in an investigation. And it occurred that the Dutch simply wanted to get rid of their dump in Poland because it's cheaper. So we'll be going through the, you know, through this cycle now, and people trying to dodgy stuff. And at a certain point, they'll realize that they'll have to deal with it. Otherwise, they have no other choice.
I think fly tipping and illegal tipping has been manifest for decades. I think one of the things that I wanted to point out was that the scale of the situation in Europe, for example, that if we put 1,000 systems in, we wouldn't be consuming 25% of waste plastic in Europe. And as each system currently on the numbers we're looking at, which are discounted from current values of methane and hydrogen, we expect each system to be producing around 6 to 7 million euros of EBITDA profit. You know, we think that once we got past the first one, then the rollout will be considerable.
Let's get back to the question. Let's not run away from the question. I said indeed that it's 2 years, I believe. Now we have, you know, we've done something very important, which is that we are joint venturing in Ireland with Powerhouse. So let's not fool ourselves. The system is not a banal system to build, right? It is not, if this was so easy, everybody would be doing it and making huge money and so on and so on, right? So we are partnering with Powerhouse, which means that now half costs, we can share the costs and we can share the knowledge, we can share the engineers. Our director, age-wise director, I'm speaking for myself, is now the chairman of Powerhouse. And it shows the close connection with between the two companies, which I find very important. And we will have two technologies running, and we'll, because in the end we're doing the same thing. We are turning, as you said, waste plastic into powerful gases, into syngas and into hydrogen, and this is the end product. But let's not fool ourselves, it's just simply not that simple. Mostly, yes, it is the war again, locked up for 3 to 4 months again because of COVID. You know, Chinese have this massive issue with constantly opening and closing, opening and closing. You know, you can see what's happening in the car market. You can't buy a new car, you have to wait for it for a year. I mean, a car, which is like a known thing. So how can you build something which is brand new if you can't get a car for a year? So let's just think of basic things that we are not having just because the long-lived items are simply gone. I mean, let's think about hunger, which you know, we are being faced now in Africa just because there's a war. So yeah, we are doing like a big thing, but even the basic things, we are not, certain people are not getting.
Yeah. So how do you see then, and this question to both of you then, this is, I presume, based on, you know, when we talked a year or so ago when we were doing the pre-IPO and then the IPO, you know, we talked about exactly the numbers you talked about, how per site, in fact, probably less, I think, because basically things were...
Well, I mean, values have gone up. I mean, the value of hydrogen has gone up more than doubled. From our perspective, it's probably trebled or quadrupled from the market perspective. Syngas, which wasn't very popular, is now very sought after because it can be blended in with natural gas up to, in an industrial situation, it can be blended in up to maybe 30% without having to change anything. And if you want to change the burners, you can go 100% syngas, and then we could offer a long-term power supply contract at a fixed price because our prices are pretty much fixed. The point is that any energy, you know, even solar, which is free, supposedly, which of course it's not, it's very expensive, we're still getting paid for our feedstock. Straightforward logic, we should be more profitable than any other energy producing scenario because we get people to pay us money to take the energy off them. Even hydroelectricity, you know, you don't get paid for the river. You know, it may come up here free, but we're in that amazing situation where we're getting money to take the calorific value quality product. It's a hydrocarbon, oil, gas, coal, and waste plastic. I mean, they're all in the same category.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, when we did the interviews the last time, or not the last time, but when we first started, we had about 4 million per site, I think. 4 million euros was what we were looking at. But my question was more about the joint venture. Okay, so we've created one joint venture with Hydronutopia and Powerhouse Energy. And I'm assuming that that's the beginning of a relationship. I mean, we've got 1,000 sites potentially in Europe, however many in the Far East, however many in the US. There was some talk about there's a US partner as well coming online. I think I listened to that in the OTCBQ. Maybe I'm wrong. But so where does this all go? You know, the scenario is you're going to have a huge two companies. My view when you first set up was that HUI, or Hydronutopia, was going to be the marketing arm, if you like, of Powerhouse Energy. In other words, it was going to put the DMG units all over the world, starting with Europe. But it's become more than that now. It's not that now. So I suppose what is it? I suppose is the question. Sorry if that was a long-winded question. But what is it? Because I think you've changed.
Yes, you can say we morphed. We still are and will be promoting DMG, and I can say it as a HY CEO because there are places in Europe. In Poland, especially, there are places in Poland as well, which I know of, that don't need hydrogen because they just need electricity, for example. And there, the DMG system will be very, very needed. But yes, you're right. AGY morphed into a company that has a technology which is different than powerhouse technology. But at the same time, what I said from the beginning, trying to eliminate the plastic and turn into hydrogen, either with the AGY system or with the PAG DMG system.
I'd also say that I hope be putting myself forward to be more involved again with Powerhouse going forward, as well as HUI. You know, I'm not particularly, as a shareholder, not particularly excited about the performance of Powerhouse for its shareholders. I would like to, if I am permitted, to start getting much more involved in the marketing and promotion of Powerhouse, which is, you know, still a phenomenal opportunity and massively undervalued in the same way that Hydrogen Utopia is. And these are two overlooked companies. And since the beginning of this year and since what's happened in Ukraine, no one has really pushed out that the actual commercial model on both of them has become, as you said, it used to be 4 million. It's now almost doubled in HUI. And I'm sure it is exactly the same in Powerhouse, because the outputs, the value of the outputs has gone through the roof.
So the way I see it is that even if the system, as you mentioned before, Kevin, will cost more, I mean, its profits will be much, much, much greater than that. Because once we build it, then the next one will be cheaper and cheaper because we know how to do it. But the profits will grow and the plastic will be produced and will produce more and more of that. And as Howard said, I agree with him, the gas prices will not come down. I think I read somewhere lately that Russia becomes a new North Korea, and that basically it's a country non grata for the world now. It will for a very, very long time, even if, you know, someone great like Khodorkovsky or Navalny for a matter comes and kneels in front of the EU or the world, they'll have a very difficult time to get back to the place where they used to be, in the position where they used to be. I think it will take at least 10 years for Russia to come back to its status.
No, I'm sorry. I disagree.
Not even that.
It'll never come back to its status, okay. Because no country will ever become reliant upon a country that has weaponized its energy. That was, you know.
What I meant, Howard, is that even like some political status where you can discuss things.
So coming back to the finances of it, if we say our system costs 32 million euros to build, just plucking numbers out of the sky, and we use 7 or 8 million pounds as a EBITDA profit, basically you're paying this back in 4 years. Now, obviously, it's not funded in cash. It's funded through loans and all sorts of other things and grants. So the reality is the payback time on these systems is going to be very quick. They're going to have 20, 25 years service at least. And, you know, you're going to basically produce massive amounts of cash cows once we get this going. I mean, one of these, if you talk about EBITDA of 8-9 million,
we're talking six, seven.
Six, seven million euros.
Yeah.
You know, let's be conservative and use a PE of 8 to 10, which in the energy sector is very low. But, you know, you're talking 60, 70 million euros or 50 to 70 million euros for one plant. Even if you go to 10 plants, you're talking 600 to 700 million. So this all works. These companies, HUI and Powerhouse Energy, are going to be worth billions of euros or billions of pounds.
Well, I think now, it's fundamental that what, you know, how Howard oftenly says it, and I agree with him, is that this company, once the plant works, has a business model, which makes sense. which you can prove, I mean, which the plastic is there, demand on hydrogen is massive. I mean, it's not even just, well, transport is one thing, but just industry. Industry needs hydrogen. And even if we have wind and solar everywhere, it's not going to supply this demand. We need more technology. So it's there's a business model there. This, yeah. is fundamental.
This is what makes it different from a lot of the hydrogen businesses in the States and in the UK. They've got very, very showy prospects, but no one actually shows you a business model where it says this is where we start making money. You look at companies in America that have been going for 20, 30 years, Ballard, Canadian, Plug Power, Fuel Cell Energy, they're all carrying $1, $2 billion of losses and have been going for 20, 30 years and have never made a profit in one single quarter. And we can project and still can't really project profits because the more they make, the more they lose. With us, once we have the first one going, it would be making money. It's very difficult for it to be losing money, especially when it's built in Europe. And I sort of, you know, point to Europe as opposed to the UK, because, you know, even if you don't get very big grants, you do get soft loans, you get ESG loans. This is a perfect ESG technology. The point where we go for funding of the SPVs, we know that there is a big resource of cash looking for a home for technologies like this. And in terms of the plastic mountain, and people keep saying, well, are you going to get enough plastic? When we started talking, I used to say that the world was producing 360 million tons of plastic a year. Well, the last thing I read last week was that we're now at 400 million tons a year. No, this whole idea of reducing plastic is a complete nonsense. So the answer is, don't try and get rid of something you can't get rid of. Yeah. Try and do something positive with it that is beneficial to everyone and eliminates it as an end of waste, which is what
I'm okay. So here's the question, as an investor myself, and I'm sure every investor is asking the question, is what is, and it's an impossible question to answer, but I'll give you a chance anyway to answer it. What is the probability these systems are going to work? Okay, because fundamentally, that's what it's all about. Everybody's got to wait to make sure the system works. If the system works, we're all on to a winner.
I think it's fair to say that in any pre-revenue technology, there is always... there has to be an element of risk, and it's a risk reward scenario. So I can put my money into a car company and know that it's going to make cars and it will make profits. And you know, I can put it into, you know, a big pharma company or oil company for that matter. I mean, look at their profits and the returns are good. This works, and the share price can be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times what it is now. You've got this massive kicker. So
what I want to say is that sometimes you see, I understand that people are impatient, because I'm a very impatient and kind of nervous person myself. I would like this to work. And I think when you're asking about the probability, we still have Electron and Linde working together on that. Nobody is walking away. Everybody keeps on working. The fact that indeed there are long lead items issues, and even just for testing things, right? You need to have components which you simply have to wait for. And they're not only Chinese. I mean, it's actually a funny story. Break this seriousness. I read it. I was shocked, actually. You know, Hershey bars, right? American company. Fantastic. I mean, some people like them, some people don't. I think their chocolate is very good. Some people think it's crap, but I like it. I just read that they will not be able to produce chocolates for the Halloween. They have a special series of chocolates that they're producing for Halloween. Why not? Because their machines that are made in Germany are not going to arrive, and they cannot produce the Hershey bars because there's not enough gas in Germany
to make these machines.
So you're having a whole tragedy for many kids, you know what I mean? Like, because they can't get what they always got just because there's not enough of gas in Germany. So I'm just trying to say that impatience is understood.
Let's address the question, which is the likelihood of this working. Well, in HUI, you've got gold standard players. You've got Electron, who make high-tech equipment for Boeing, re-coating their turbine blades for their jet engines. I mean, that's pretty precise stuff. They do stuff that we don't know about for GE, but if you work for GE, you've got to be of the highest standard. They do work for Shell. Again, they don't scrimp when it comes to stuff in the oil business. So, and they've taken this project on and putting their reputation behind it. They fail on this and they do themselves a huge amount of damage. Linda, who have an engineer working at Electron, who involves himself on the weekly meetings, is very confident, because if he's not confident, he'd go back to Linda and say, I'm not meant to say that. Let's get out of here. But they don't. That they are very opposite. Linda are getting more and more interested in what we're doing, because for them, they see that they're the sort of company that's interested in 1,000 units at 30 million euros a unit.
And however much per maintenance contract for each unit for
absolutely
the next 25 yeah. years, you know. So
Correct.
Initially, the 30 million euros for 1,000 units is okay, but actually money for nothing for the next 25 years.
Yeah, you're right. You know, if they've got a number of units and they're doing the O&M for it, that's big money for them.
I don't think it's also a secret to say that Keith Riley and the gentleman, Mr. Bocke from Linde, visited Electron, and they'll be visiting Electron in Nijkerk in Netherlands frequently. There are many things to do together. I mean, they have to pick materials. They have to, then it's very high-tech engineering stuff that I could never even fathom. So they are meeting each other actually in person at their factory.
On a regular basis.
To make sure this works.
Okay, so let's move on in terms of the American side of things, OTCBQ, and also the scenario. Is there some sort of partnership going on in America? Have we got some sort of connection with the company?
I think what we can say is that we've HUI has moved rapidly into OTC. So we now have an American base, and as everyone knows, Americans like America. They don't like, they're very concerned about investing outside of America. If they can invest on the OTC, then they're very willing to do so. Investing on AIM or something like that is like a foreign country. So yes, there is definite interest in America. It's not something that we're pushing at the moment, because we've got our hands full in Europe. There's enough business to do in Europe, but just fair, there have been changes in the law in the last couple of weeks, which will advantage low carbon technologies. I think they're giving up to $3 a kilo for hydrogen if it's low carbon.
I must be very honest that United States, well, America, as we say, you know, was always my big dream. I mean, when I started AGY, I saw the timings on the EIAs in Europe. I thought it would be great to build still then a DMG plant in the United States, because there are places like Pennsylvania, for example, where you're waiting for a permit to do this for 30 days, literally. So I thought this would be a great thing to do, a great country to roll them out. And it's also a huge country with a huge plastic production, and finding a partner there actually would be great. So Howard is right. We have a handful, we have a work to do in Europe, but this is my big dream, and we are going out there in 2 weeks, in August, by the end of August, to talk to big American
investor roadshow, and anyone else who wants to speak to us.
So
very good.
We can, you know, one leads to the other. We meet one person who can introduce us to another person, and who knows what kind of huge company we might end up with. Because, you know, Americans think big, they dream big, and I think actually AGY. This is a good place for AGY as well.
Some of the multinationals we're talking to now also have enormous exposure in the States.
Yeah. So on that note, and you talked about the fact that there's potential for huge partnerships or huge different things, you guys are both dreaming in the right way, dreaming very big in terms of this. So, you know, I sincerely hope that some of these things happen quicker than we hope they're going to happen. But at the same time, I think it's very sensible for you to put this 2 years scenario on it. But the potential after this period of time for this to roll out very quick, I think is very high. And I think that's the thing that we should focus on at the minute. And I think as people start to get the message that, you know, HUI is worth about 35 or 36 million, is it pounds? Maybe a little bit more than that, 40 million.
No, no, it was 40. 38, down on Friday.
You know, so the scenario is that one system will currently make the market cap appropriate, and 10 systems means it's going to 10 bag, and 100 systems means it's going to 100 fold, you know, literally. I mean, it's crazy in terms of when you want to think about it like that. You know, it's still an amazing opportunity. It was a year ago. I've seen what's happened develop, and I'm actually more excited about the development now than I was then. But it's just going to take a bit longer than we all had hoped, I think, is the
reason. Kevin, I think we mustn't forget about one fundamental thing, is that, you see, we're going to be talking to the shareholders, and there's, like, you know, there's a place where we are now, or where we have been a year ago, but also there's, of course, the end game, but there are milestones, and we'll be able to show, look, this is, you know, we're progressing with the technology. This was what it was doing. We're going to show what's happening in the factory. So the proof of concept is not just a full working, you know, system. There'll be things on the way to ensure people that the system is going the right way, that this is working. Because, you know, it's not just like, oh, you know, from now on we will just shut up for 2 years and now we'll invite you for a grand opening and then you'll see it working. No, there will be things happening on the way to prove that the system is on its right path.
What we're not going to do is what regrettably Powerhouse has done for the last 2 years, which is lived in this dome of silence. And that's why I hope that my limited skill sets will be applied to Powerhouse to ensure that it becomes far more accessible and there is far more progress in Powerhouse than there has been for the last 4 years.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that any shareholder or anybody was going to think that both of your dynamism was going to keep quiet for the next 2 years, so don't worry about that. Because I think everybody understands you guys are driven to make this thing happen. So I think this is a positive, and I hope that your input into Powerhouse Energy comes quickly, because yes, it's been Powerhouse Energy shareholders have been like mushrooms, they've been kept in the dark, you know, and that has to change. So anyway, we could talk all day, but I think we've had a good chat there in terms of all the different things that we've done. So thank you, Alexandria. Thank you, Howard.
Kevin,
we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. Can we just, before we thank each other, can we just say one more thing, which I think is very important? We just came back, you know, from a very tiresome trip in Ireland, and I think kind of it shows what AGI is, that AGI is adaptable. I mean, you know, the situation in the world changed. Poland became it's a very important market, but we just thought, okay, well, if it's so dangerous there, right? I mean, if people are risk averse, they'll want to see us in a different country, which is far away from war. So we right away moved to Ireland, and we found an incredible site there. We found incredible waste suppliers, incredible possible off-takers of our syngas and of our hydrogen. So we are very active there. And I think this is what a company should be, because crises will happen, you know, that they'll be happening in life. And the way to do it is to be adaptable. So we just, you know, we just move around and we just don't just focus on one location. This was always my dream, to focus on different places: Greece, Ireland, Poland. Now we have huge interest from Germany. We are probably, you know, some German investors hopefully will be listening to it, and they know how active we are in Germany now. So it's, I think, important to say, just as an ending. And thank you very much for listening.
Okay, Alexandria and Howard, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Speaking to you again as this all progresses, and yes, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Okay, guys, so HUI, what can I say? I mean, the upside potential on that stock is absolutely humongous. I don't like to use that word very often, but it really is massive if they actually get the whole thing going. Not much higher at the minute than the current than when the IPO went out at, I think it was 7.5p, so a lot of potential there. Just a quick chat, I suppose, about what was happening last week. We had some movements there with Chilbrands. Chilbrands seems to have broken the downtrend, gone to 2.25p on one of Zach's comments there, looking at 3p and 4p going forward. I think really has a lot of potential. Nothing really is priced in. And, you know, chill.com as an asset has got to be worth probably more than the current market capitalization. We also had some things moving with Saimi. It's quite extraordinary. It seems like finally they're going to actually do what they said they were going to do a couple of years ago. So there's some excitement around that stock for sure. There was good news about Technology Minerals that everybody missed, in terms of the fact that they've produced this box that is going to be able to store the lithium-ion batteries, which are very dangerous to transport. And in itself, that is a business. In itself, it's a business, along with all the other stuff that's on there. Ben's Creek got extra orders this week as well, with the coal. A couple of trains already left the station, basically because very, very bad weather in that part of the world, and they came out without any problems. So, yeah, we've got a lot of undervalued stocks out there that, on good news, things are starting to move. Hydrogen Utopia itself moved a bit last week, both up, went up to over 10p, I think, and has now come back down to 8.8, but a lot of potential. Looks like we're in recession, but don't forget the way the market works is that the market already knew recession was coming months and months and months and months ago, and that's why the market is down so much now. And when they realize that now it's been announced we've got recession, the markets actually tend to start doing well because they're forward-looking things and they're looking at what's going to be happening in a year's time, not what's going to be happening now. So, yeah, I'm optimistic now what's going to happen going forward. And let's see. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hopefully that was something worth listening to. And yeah, Phil's away today, so I did this all by my little self. I'm looking forward to him coming back. It's much easier when we do it together. Okay, all the best, and speak to you soon.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.